So today we'd like to read a verse from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, chapter 22, Majjalila, verse 31. Krishna Surya Sama Maya Haya Andikara Yahan Krishna Taha Nahi Mayara Adhikara. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Krishna is compared to sunshine and Maya is compared to darkness. Wherever there is sunshine, there cannot be darkness. As soon as one takes to Krishna consciousness, the darkness of illusion, the influence of the external energy, will immediately vanish. Purport. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is stated 2.9.34. What appears to be truth without me is certainly my illusory energy, for nothing can exist without me. It is like the reflection of real light in the shadows, for in the light there are neither shadows nor reflections. Wherever there is light, there cannot be darkness. When a living entity becomes Krishna conscious, he is immediately relieved of all material lusty desires. Lusty desires and greed are associated with rajas and tamas, passion and darkness. When one becomes Krishna conscious, the modes of passion and darkness immediately vanish, and the mode of goodness, sattva-gun, remains. When one is situated in the mode of goodness, he can make spiritual advancement and understand things clearly. This position is not possible for everyone. When a person is Krishna conscious, he continually hears about Krishna, thinks about him, worships him, and serves him as a devotee. If he remains in Krishna consciousness in this way, the darkness of Maya certainly will not be able to touch him. So I'm sure that we are all here because we're looking for something of meaning. We're looking for some spirituality. We're looking for some meaningful connection. And that connection that we're all looking for and hankering for is actually our connection with Krishna, our constitutional position. Srila Prabhupada, he used to describe that Krishna consciousness wasn't actually a religion, it was a science. Krishna consciousness is the science of transforming matter into spirit so that we can perceive the spiritual reality even within this world. And Bhagavad Gita presents that science, the science of the spirit soul, the science of understanding how to extricate ourself from material existence and come into the spiritual reality. And it's a very unique, special process. And so within the Vedic literatures, the ultimate aim of the Vedic literatures is to come to this platform of pure spirituality. So we understand from Bhagavad Gita and especially literatures like Sri Ishupanishad that every living entity is in quality one with God, in one with the Lord. So every individual person is a very unique spiritual spark with unique spiritual qualities, and everyone is very dear to Krishna or God, very, very dear. And we understand from scriptures that we should honor everyone as such, that I should see everyone as the most dear son or daughter of the Supreme Lord, and I should respect them and honor them accordingly. And one of our literature, Sri Ishupanishad, describes that one who can imbibe that consciousness, for him there is no more anxiety, there is no more illusion, and he never has hate for any living entity, because he sees everyone as sister and brother, and God as the Father. And the Bhagavad Gita describes how everything within the creation is actually the energy of the Lord. Bhumir, apo, nalo, vayu, kam, mano, buddhir, evacha, ahankara, iti, ame, bina, prakritir, astada. Krishna describes that earth, air, fire, water, ether, mind, intelligence, and even this ego, They're all energies of God. And Krishna describes them as his separated material energies. So these energies, we're surrounded by all these different energies. This wood is a transformation of earth, and the cement and everything is a transformation of earth. There's air in this room. There's light of the sun. So everything around us is actually composed of an energy of God, which is non-different than God. Even the air and the ether, which is like the space between the atoms. So literally, we are surrounded by the absolute truth. Our spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, he was giving a lecture once in New York on this point. And he said to the audience, he said, "You are not sitting on the floor." He said, "You are not sitting on a floor." He said, "You are sitting on Krishna." Because this is Krishna's energy. This is Krishna's energy. And that is spiritual consciousness. And our literatures describe how if one can realize this and realize one's connection with God and realize that within this creation there's a perfect, complete arrangement by the Absolute Person for the maintenance and sustenance of all living entities, then everyone can be satisfied. Everyone in this world can be completely satisfied according to the God-given arrangement, that everyone has a certain quota by the arrangement of God. However, because of our exhibition of our desire to be independent of God, we try to find happiness by utilizing the resources of material nature for our own benefit. I manipulate material nature, I manipulate people to try and find happiness in this world. But that is not actually the source of happiness. The real source of happiness comes from our knowledge of God and living according to the God-given arrangement. Our scriptures teach that the only cause of incompleteness in this world is lack of knowledge of the perfect, complete arrangement of the perfect Creator, or Lord Krishna. So Bhagavad Gita is the science of trying to understand this philosophy that we are actually surrounded by God in all aspects of our life. One time Srila Prabhupada said, Krishna consciousness, it's very, very simple. It's very, very simple. But he said, because we are not pure, it becomes complicated. So all of us are here because we're striving for spiritual life. We have spiritual goals. We want to attain some state of permanent spiritual happiness, and we encounter that sometimes it's not so easy to remember that God is everywhere and within everything and in the hearts of everyone. And Prabhupada explained once, he said that's not surprising, and he explained that how the conditioned souls, that us, we have all been in contact with this material nature, he said, since time immemorial. We've had many births and deaths within this material creation, and we've become very conditioned by that material nature and the material mindset of trying to exploit and enjoy material nature. And so it's very hard to break that conditioning. So within Krishna consciousness, it's referred to as the process of sadhana bhakti, or devotional service in practice. We are practicing to reawaken that divine consciousness. And especially in this age, through the process of chanting the Maha Mantra, everyone has this very beautiful experience when we sit and do bhajans and the melodious kirtans, and your mind becomes peaceful, and we get a taste of that spiritual reality. So sadhana bhakti is a practice to bring one to the point of experiencing that spiritual reality, not just when you're sitting down doing kirtan, but 24 hours a day, that in all activities, when you're eating, taking prasadam, that's very easy to experience something transcendental. Even you may be working, you may have a family, doing so many activities in this world. If we can fully imbibe Krishna consciousness, we will be able to see how Krishna is manifest even in those seemingly mundane activities. Because in reality, if you dovetail everything with the service of God, it becomes transcendental. So sometimes it's described that Krishna consciousness, it's a process of energy transformation. We are transforming material energy into spiritual energy just by a change of consciousness. And in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna, he also says how this material energy, it's very difficult to overcome. But he says, one who becomes conscious of me and surrenders unto me, he can very easily cross beyond this tight capturing material nature by that pure consciousness. And Srila Prabhupada, he described that once as like, I don't know if you have ever seen a cat carry a kitten in its mouth. Right? The kitten is feeling the protection of the cat, the mother cat, in the mouth. And you may have seen, I've seen it, a cat with a rat in its mouth. And the cat is experiencing the jaws of death. The rat is experiencing the jaws of death. So it's the same mouth, but different relationship. So if we be, if we want to be independent of God, Krishna, he allows that. He allows us to have that independence. But in that independence, we accept the responsibility for those reactions for all our activities. And therefore, we experience so much difficulty and suffering in this world. But if we can dovetail our consciousness with Krishna, then the entire energy changes. Just like this electricity, the electrician, he can use it to produce light, he can use it to produce heat, or produce cold. In the same way, the energies in this world, they're all Krishna's energies, and according to our relationship with Krishna, they'll have a different effect. So a very important part of the transformation of that energy and our experience with this world is also our interactions with those around us. Because according to how we interact with others, that's a practical manifestation of our level of spiritual realization. Because if I'm trying to exploit you or take advantage of you, or if I disrespect you, how can that be pleasing to Krishna? I often like to say that we all come to the temple or mosques or church and we behave very respectfully and nice to everyone, kindly, compassionately. And then sometimes we go home to our different ashrams and close the door. And sometimes we behave differently. We speak harsh words, or we're rude, or cruel, or unkind, forgetful. So there's some disconnect there. So devotional service and practice, sadhana bhakti, means we want to stop those disconnects in our relationship with others and also our relationship with Krishna. And as a part of that process and a part of the service which we do is actually to help couples improve their relationships. Because Srila Prabhupada, he described once that, he said, why do you love this body? He said, no one cares for a dead body. You bury it, you burn it, you never keep a dead body. And he said, you care for the body because of the presence of the soul. And then he said, why do you care for the soul? You care for the soul because the soul is connected to Krishna. And therefore you care and maintain this body nicely. And then Prabhupada said, why do you care for others? You care for and love your family members, your community members. And again he said, because of the presence of the soul. And then he said, in this way the love goes to Krishna. So when we have harmonious, respectful, kind, compassionate relationships, that's very pleasing to God or Krishna. And the next thing he said in that conversation was very interesting. He said, but the interruption or the disconnect that happens in those relationships, he said it's illusion. He said it's actually maya, that which is not. So as in this verse we read, it said, where there's Krishna, there's no darkness. There's no darkness. Where there's light, there's no darkness. You turn the light on, the darkness disappears. So if we bring Krishna into our relationships, the darkness disappears, the disconnect disappears. So in one sense, the process of having good relationships is very simple. It just means remembering Krishna is there. But again, it's very difficult. So a part of what we do as marriage mentors and marital educators is to help devotees to understand how to have healthy interactions in the mode of goodness. So we can do that in one of two ways. We can simply remember Krishna is there, then automatically problem solved. But that's very hard to remember. The more we remember Krishna, it's going to help us have better relationships. And simultaneously, the more we endeavor to be respectful and compassionate and kind and understanding and patient and tolerant in all our relationships, that's going to be pleasing to Krishna, and he'll be more inclined to reveal himself to us. Hare Krishna.
There's no time limit to when one can receive flowers.
Yes.
Remember that. We ladies like flowers anytime.
So either by becoming fully Krishna conscious, we can solve all problems, or by acting on the platform of Krishna conscious activities in the mode of goodness, will greatly accelerate our ability to be able to access and understand Krishna. So simultaneously, those two can take place. So would you like to say something? Are you ready?
So my husband was speaking about applied Krishna consciousness. Because it's not enough to just understand the philosophy. We actually also have to apply it. And so every day Krishna gives us so many interactions where we can apply the practice of Krishna consciousness. And it's especially evident in relationships. We understand that most of the progress that we make in this world is due to how we interact with others. So we are looking for spiritual mentors who have achieved realizations in how to interact with Krishna and to take guidance from them. And we also get immense benefit from positive Krishna conscious interactions with others. So we see that we, as my husband was saying, each one of us has talents and abilities, and usually they are brought out in the interactions with other people. So when we have positive, encouraging interactions, that helps us to bring out our own full potential. So we see that any one of us who had any small encouragement from Srila Prabhupada or a spiritual master, that that encouragement can very much sustain us to practice Krishna consciousness nicely. So in all of our interactions, we want to try to strive to encourage the potential in each other. And Krishna gives us so many opportunities. Sometimes that comes by encouragement, and sometimes it comes by tests. Because Krishna wants us to somehow or other root out all of the unfavorable junk that we have inside of us. Sometimes we call those anartas. And so the way that we get rid of those anartas is usually by Krishna sending us some kind of interaction. And we need to see what it is we have to learn in each situation. So a big part of being able to accept that learning is to be conscious that at every moment there's something for us to learn, and to try to be be on the lookout for what we can learn. Our gut reaction in this world is usually just simply that, a reaction. We usually react if our ego gets bruised or if someone says something which offends us. We tend to react. But the human form of life is very special. Because just like my husband was describing about a cat, my kids had a kitten one time, and every time they would take a little string and they would, you know, wave it on the floor, the kitten would immediately come and pounce. It just automatically reacts, sees the string wiggling, and it pounces. So we're a little bit like that if we're not conscious, that something happens and we instantly react. But in the human form of life, we have the intelligence that we can be a little bit introspective and we can see what is it I'm supposed to learn before I just react. So that requires slowing down a little bit, making that pause. What am I supposed to learn in this situation and what is the best way to react? And Krishna's going to give us many opportunities. Oftentimes we do react, but then we'll find that these same negative interactions are happening again and again because we haven't learned the lesson. Once we learn some lesson that we need to learn to root those anarthas out of our heart, then he doesn't have to keep sending those lessons. So if we want to pass our tests in advance, we need to see what it is we have to learn. And then those reactions, which are usually pretty unpalatable, will start to disappear. And that is under our control. Because when we've learned our lesson, Krishna doesn't have to keep sending them to us. So usually, Krishna kind of handpicks, you know, like our partners to, you know, trigger our little attempts to react so that we can learn our lessons and bring out our anarthas. So if you think, why the heck am I with this person? It's because there's something we need to learn. And if we want to, you know, pass the examination and become more spiritually aware, we need to stop and see exactly what it is that we need to learn in this situation and what is the best way in which we can respond. So we need to try to respond from our higher nature, not from these lower modes of passion and ignorance that my husband was explaining. Because if we can try to live in our higher self, life will be absolutely beautiful. Whereas when we live in our lower self, we tend to find that we're unhappy, we're not encouraged, we feel sad, we don't, you know, we complain a lot. But if we can live more and perceive things from our higher nature, we will naturally see that we are much happier. That's why Srila Prabhupada asked us to chant Hare Krishna and be happy. Because in order to be happy, we actually need to perceive things from the vision of our higher self. And if we're not happy, it's probably an indication that we're acting from our lower self and that there's room for improvement. You want to say something?
Yeah. So we need to access that higher self and understand what is the higher self, what is our real spiritual nature. And especially the English language, it's very conducive to being materially conditioned. Like I might say I'm a Canadian, but in reality I have a body that took birth in Canada and I'm a spirit soul. We're all spirit souls. And you may have a body that took birth in Slovenia, I have a body that took birth in Canada, someone might have a body that took birth in Italy, but we're all spirit souls. But we identify with this body. And I identify with my central perception and my perception of the world. I will say things like, oh, I am angry, or I am hungry. But am I actually hungry? I'm a spirit soul. I'm not this body. And in Old English, they would say, hunger has come upon me, or anger has come upon me. It's not that I'm angry, but some stimulus, something in the environment, has caused his anger to come upon me. And you can see how the language was much more spiritually oriented. Because if I realize this situation has occurred, and maybe this individual is causing me some distress, and this irritation has come upon me, this anger has come upon me, then I don't have to identify with the anger. Instead of identifying with the anger and my body and just reacting, because if I do that, I'm probably just going to become angry and say something negative and we'll destroy our relationship. But if I see I'm a spirit soul and this anger has come upon me, I am not the anger, then I can respond in some positive way, some in a mode of goodness. So if someone's irritating me, I might question them, what is causing your behavior? Is there something that you need? Is there something that you want? Is there something that I'm doing wrong? I can change the whole dynamic of that interaction, that relationship, by taking it out of the modes of passion and ignorance where you just react to the mode of goodness and pure goodness, where, as Uttama is saying, I realize that somehow Krishna has arranged this situation for me to learn something, to exhibit compassion or understanding. So every situation at every moment, as our spiritual master Prabhupada said, he said, not a blade of grass moves without the will of the Supreme Lord. So if we can develop that consciousness more and more and become less reactive to situations and learn how to respond from the mode of goodness with compassion and respect and understanding and tolerance and patience, then we live in that world of light where Krishna is present.
Would anyone like to give any reflection on anything that they've heard? Something that benefited them, or?
I have some thoughts. Hari Bol, Hare Krishna. I have some thoughts. Yes, it is true that in the mood of goodness, basically everything is okay. But the majority of people, you know, we have like a Varnashram system. You already know this, that if the people don't follow the regulative principles and chanting 16 rounds, it's very hard to be in the mood of goodness. And threefold misery, Sadibhautika is there, so everything is connected. Mm-hmm. So for the people in general, just Brahmanas and Kshatriyas have self-discipline. Others, they don't have self-discipline. Mm-hmm. So without Varnashrama, I don't think that we can have good relationships. Because we are forced to act according to our to the three modes of material nature, we will be forced. Even if we know, but we will be forced.
No.
No?
You always have a choice. And the more each one of us makes better choices, the more that is going to affect even the whole world. Because if you respond with compassion to someone who's acting in the mode of ignorance and passion, they can sometimes pause and appreciate that. And you can help them to also rise, maybe momentarily, to the mode of goodness. So we should realize that our actions have effects. And we can influence things. And yes, it's hard.
What about the situations out of the box?
Like out of the box?
Yeah, like... Mm. One example I'll give, Yugoslavia. They all wanted to have very, you know, nice country, everything, but we know how at the end everything was, you know, ruined, war and everything. Nobody basically followed any regulatory principles. And they wanted to have these good relationships and everything, but at the end it was a really, really nasty thing.
They didn't really have the universal understanding that we are all sons and daughters of God and we're fighting for country. Whereas we don't own anything. We come into this world naked and we leave this world naked. This is not our country. This is God's country. And He's blessed us that we can live on this land and take advantage. So as Prabhupada would say, Krishna consciousness is a panacea. And in relationship with Varnashram, Prabhupada described that Varnashram establishes a situation where people can live peacefully. And they can be elevated from, actually Prabhupada said, from animal life to human life, from human life to godly life, and from godly life back to Godhead. And anyone in that institution of Arnashram, they can develop pure unalloyed devotion. Like we have the example of Ramananda Roy, who was actually a Sudra. He was actually the topmost Vaishnava. And Prabhupada described once of a, in relationship with Varnashrama, he said, you may see a devotee sweeping the temple. And Srila Prabhupada said, he is not a sweeper. He's not sweeping. He's not just a sweeper. Prabhupada said he's teaching others to sweep. Because he's engaging in loving devotion, and then others see that someone is coming to the temple and they say, why is this person sweeping the floor so happy? So he becomes a preacher just by his activities. Actually, one of our god brothers, Jayananda Prabhu, is a very well-known devotee. He's a very simple person who brought many people to Krishna consciousness. And one of our god brothers was so impressed. First day he came to the temple, he helped Jayananda take the garbage to the dump. And he said, if the garbage man is this happy, he said, this Krishna consciousness must be very special.
So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he lived in a time when there was a Muslim rule, which was not very favorable to what he wanted to present. Did that stop him? No. We see that, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, it was very atheistic around his place, and the British were ruling. It wasn't like some wonderful utopian, Varnashram Vaishnava situation. But somehow or other, wherever we are, we have some influence. And we need to act within our sphere of influence. And when you act within your sphere of influence, that will gradually increase. But when we focus on, the problems of everybody else, we're not spending time making the influence, positive influence that we can. So the best thing is to start with ourselves and whatever we can do and pray that we can have some benefit in what we do.
And especially the Grihastha Ashram, because every individual Grihastha Ashram is like a foundational block in the structure of Varnashram. So you're building this building, and the foundation stones are every individual family unit. And if you build a structure and the foundation stones are weak, you are going to have problems. You're going to end up with something like the Leaning Tower of Pisa. And similarly, if we try to establish a Varnashram society and we don't have stable family units, stable, healthy, happy family units, it's going to be very difficult, if not possible at all,
impossible,
to have Varnashram, because the Grihastha Ashram supports all the other ashrams. So in that sense, Varnashram is extremely important, and everyone who is a Grihastha can take that as a great responsibility they have to make their ashrams the best they can be to facilitate Srila Prabhupada's mission.
Does anyone else have any reflections or anything they want to share?
Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada was our acharya, so could you maybe give us some example how what we can learn from his Grihastha Ashram?
From
his Grihastha Ashram.
Grihastha Ashram.
Srila Prabhupada was very expert in balancing his daily life. Prabhupada once said that in order for me to finish all of my rounds in one day, I would take a break before I ate each one of my meals, and I would chant four rounds. So in the morning he would chant, a block of rounds. And then at lunchtime, before he would eat his lunch, he would take a pause And he would chant another four rounds. And the same with before dinner, and then in the evening. And that way he set aside a time, even his very hectic, busy life, to somehow or other keep a focus on his sadhana. So I find that a very inspirational tip, how it's possible to, you know, make that balance and make the time for things that we value in our life. So that's just one thing that comes to my mind.
And then when Srila Prabhupada was in his grihastha life, and even from his first meeting with Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, where he had received this instruction from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj to preach Krishna consciousness in the English language in the Western world, Prabhupada always thought of that. He was always thinking of that instruction, how he could do that, even as a grihastha. And gradually he began some preaching activities as a grihastha. And he was actually, when he was a grihastha, he was actually quite well known and respected amongst his godbrothers for his preaching activities. One of his godbrothers, Dr. Obi Kapoor, was talking with Prabhupada when Prabhupada had his pharmacy. And he knew that Prabhupada, he was a very wonderful preacher. He was influencing many people to take the mission of Lord Chaitanya seriously. So this Dr. Kapoor, in a joking way, because Prabhupada was a pharmacist, he asked Srila Prabhupada, he said, "What is your secret formula for your preaching activity?" And Srila Prabhupada, according to Dr. Kapoor, replied, "Trinadupi sunichena," that to be humble and tolerant and patient and to respect others. And that way one will constantly chant the holy name. And Srila Prabhupada told him at that time,
What did he tell him?
He said, "I'm going to spread this all over the world." So Prabhupada had that great determination and vision of how he was going to execute the order of a spiritual master. Even as a grihastha, he was looking forward. So we can all have those kinds of goals in our life, how we can all do something, and all those seemingly small somethings turn into something
very big. So thank you very much for your kindly listening. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Jai, Hari Bol.